morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of our listeners. I'm Barry Miller, your host at the Revamp Podcast. Today, I'm honored to host Will Allred, co-founder at Lavender. He's going to talk today a lot about sales, sales emails, sales technologies. Will is one of the top followed sales, I guess, influencer on LinkedIn. So you may be already following him, but if you're not, you should start following him on LinkedIn. You'll learn a lot of information, especially about emails and sales emails specifically. Will, take it away. Tell me something that I missed during that intro.
No, I mean, that's great. I like always cringe at the term influencer just because I think about like someone on Instagram like showcasing sneakers or something. But that said, I appreciate that. I'm not sure if there's anything you missed.
All right, that's pretty good then. So first of all, I like those influencers also on Instagram that show up sneakers. So it's you can view it as a compliment too. First, I think really there's a lot we can talk about for our listeners. We're gonna talk about first Lavender, because it's a really cool technology. Will didn't ask me to talk about Lavender. I'm just super curious about it and want you guys to know about it. From there, we're gonna talk about part of our theme this month at Deal Hub is to understand the Great Resignation and how companies can keep their employees and retain their employees. Super important during this really great time for employees and for startups in the world. And then at the end, you should stay tuned to hear some good tips for emails and sending emails. Just wanted to give that out there for our listeners, just in case you're only looking to get tips on sales emails. You should, one, listen to this whole podcast because it's relevant to all of it. But if not, it'll be later in the podcast. So Will, first, let's start. What is Lavender?
Yeah, Lavender is a sales email system. We help sales reps write better emails faster. Now, we approach that in three main ways. Maybe four if you're talking about the coaching dashboard, but we give you insight on who you're talking to. We give you insight on what you're saying and how you're saying it and scoring it for what's most likely to get a response. We weave all of those things together within the inbox to help you do the job of writing better emails faster. And then we provide training and insight back through a dashboard for managers, for individual reps to learn how to actually up their game.
I love that. So it's not just telling you, it's not just correcting you one and done, and maybe you'll retain that information. It's also teaching you so that you actually become a better writer for sales emails. Is that correct?
Exactly. I think about everything that we're trying to do within the product. We're trying to help reps get better. So one of the things in particular that we just recently started to roll out is new sentence recommendations. So say you write an overly long sentence, this will hurt the ability for someone to understand what it is that you're trying to say. Not only will we make a recommendation on a better sentence, we'll provide a couple options to show you different ways it could be done and explain what we're doing behind the scenes. So it'll be like, we're trying to break this up into two sentences to showcase the thoughts more clearly, or we're removing a lot of unnecessary language from the sentence. And then we'll show you exactly how we did it so you can learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm a big Hemingway app fan, which is a website, Hemingway, which does something similar, but you have to go to the Hemingway app to do that. But exactly, like it really keeps things concise and has definitely made me a better writer as a marketer this past year, because I've only been using it for the past year. So I'm sure that resource where people are already working in their emails will be super helpful.
For sure. In Hemingway, we take a ton of inspo for them. They've designed a elegantly simple product that, you know, really helps you cut a lot of the fluff from your writing. We're trying to take that obviously to the next level by providing recommendations and coaching insights and tailoring that stuff back to you and who you are. But yeah, they've done a fantastic job with their product.
Right. And then obviously Grammarly is something that rings a bell, but they're not just focused on sales. They're just they're focused on all writing. You guys
can be similar to Hemingway, sales. Right?
Right.
Similar to Hemingway, it's a broader focused product, whereas we're much more specifically focused. You know, I tend to have this conversation more than once in a while, right? And so like my typical response back is, yes, those tools are fantastic. If those tools were designed to make you money, you would have Lavender.
Right. Love that. Cool. So you have this technology. When are people, before I say when, who's buying it? Is it the sales leaders? Is it AEs? Is it SDRs? Is it the CRO?
It's a mix. So we sort of operate our go-to-market mostly off of a bottoms-up model, which is individual sales reps start using the product. They tell other sales reps about the product. And then from that, you know, Slack discussion, VP or CRO finds out about us. And then yeah, that's typically how a conversation starts. We also have a secondary path of bottoms up that we see where an individual rep will start using it. But they won't necessarily think to promote it internally, but their results in the inbox will actually speak for themselves. And their manager will be like, what are you doing that's got you having five times the amount of positive responses your peers? And then they'll respond back and be like, oh, I use Lavender. And then they're like, okay, cool. What's Lavender? So most of our go-to-market today is inbound. That said, we've done some outbound. We've tested that out. And obviously we have success with it. We use our own tool, but most of our time and energy is spent on inbound. Mm-hmm. And outbound would be more focused on, say, like the traditional reaching out to a VP or CRO and then working your way in that way.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. And then when is it that, like, let's assume the SDRs, the AEs, when is it that they have such a pain that they're reaching out to Lavender?
Yeah, when is it? It's an interesting question, right? Because I've heard some stories where, like, we started conversations with companies and then they decide to hold off and then they see some email go out the door and they're like, oh my gosh, okay, like we send that. And then they'll come back and have a conversation with us. So like that's happened before, but typically it's folks who are just realizing that like the status quo in email doesn't work. The stats that I love to look at are, and they really started in March of 2020. You know, that there was something that happened there that kind of changed the way we do business. I don't know. But we saw the amount of outbound emails skyrocket. HubSpot puts the number around like 250, it's just over two times the amount of emails going out the door. Yeah, that same HubSpot research saw reply rates almost halving during that process. And so with so much outbound hitting people's inboxes, you know, we had to like rethink, how are we approaching email? Is this actually, you know, proving the returns that we thought it would? And so that's been a huge boon for us because, you know, folks are like, oh, we need to think about how we approach email. Like clearly these old dry templates aren't going to do it anymore. And were they doing it really before? Up for debate, but the response rates have obviously fallen off. And you look at like the average reply rate, it's like 1 to 5%. We look across our user base, I think the last data we published is like somewhere in like 30. And so like we're clearly seeing like better results using our product.
30%, that's amazing. So yeah, definitely something to try. And then, cool. And then before you started Lavender, were you doing sales before that?
We were actually building a marketing tech product before that. So we built a customer segmentation platform for about 2 years up until really May of 2020, at which point we pivoted the software into what is now Lavender today. But we were having great success working with, you know, groups like Yamaha, Gravity Blankets, but ultimately we just hit this moment where we had realized we had to switch some things up. Obviously some things around us had changed, and so marketing budgets were drying up, and so we took a different approach, and it's working out for us.
Yeah, great. Congrats on that. So something that I think you can speak to, as since all your customers are sales, and I'm sure that our sales reps or sales leaders, I know you mentioned, and there is some sprinkle in customer success, which I'm sure that's great. Mm-hmm. What is it? I'm trying to understand, like, some of the bigger picture. Right now, we're going through what people are calling the Great Resignation.
Sure.
And, you know, also, it's not just happening in restaurants, but it's also happening in the software industry. And within that industry, there's many reasons why people are leaving and how to also keep those people. With your experience working with the sales, salespeople, frontline workers in sales, what is it that keeps them happy at their current employer? Are there any specific things that you've seen?
Well, yeah, I think it's easy to always come back to the salary discussion and say, you know, are you paying your reps enough? You know, inflation hit this year, and you know, you could argue that if you're not getting a raise, you're technically getting a pay cut. That said, the thing that really makes people happy at their job isn't necessarily the finances. Obviously, that's like one of those like staple items that you probably need to just like make sure you're checking the box on. But I think the thing that really matters is, do people feel like you're investing in them? Do they feel like they're growing? Do they feel like they're learning? Because you know, a lot of times I run into sales reps who are just telling me like, yeah, when it comes to email, my job is just to hit send on what I've been given. I literally had our team had a conversation with an SDR the other day who like word for word said, yeah, being an SDR here kind of sucks. I know the emails are bad and I want to fix them, but I'm not supposed to, right? So there's a level of autonomy that people are craving. There's a level of investment that people are craving in their progression and then getting better. I challenge sales leaders right now to sort of rethink how they've been approaching ramp, you know, getting sales reps ready to actually get better, because the current status quo is like, okay, we're too busy scaling, so let's just give them these templates that they can go hit send on. And if you actually invest in them and them getting better and them, you know, learning how to actually write an email, there's so much good that comes from that. The notion of like good writing is clear thinking is something that I fully subscribe to. And so if you're teaching people actually how to think, if you're teaching people actually how to, you know, get better at thinking through what it is to sell, it's going to have awesome down funnel effects for you, not just when they're SDRs, but as they progress in their careers. Maybe they become a manager and then now they can teach other people to up their game. Or maybe they become an AE because they took the time to like understand and think through what it is they're actually sending out. They're able to be much more thoughtful about the entire sales process. So they have better success as AEs. There's sort of this ripple effect that comes from something as simple as investing in making sure that they know how to write. Now, obviously, like I like to focus on that specifically, but especially right now, most people's quote unquote office is their laptop screen. And so if you're thinking about the technology you use, that's essentially your office. whether you're sending out of emails, sending out emails from Gmail versus Outlook. It's an entirely different office for your worker. Whether it's Salesforce or HubSpot, it's an entirely different environment that they're spending their day to day in. And it's one of the things that we obsess with over here, because like every single like pixel matters, because you think about how much time they spend emailing every day. It tends to be over 50% of their day. And so we think about every single interaction, right? Something is slightly annoying, that just magnifies because it happens all the time. And so I know RepView has put some data out about this. I can't remember exactly what it is, but the tech stack at your company really matters. Reps seem to really care about that, and they should, right? If they're going to be trying to grow their career and trying to build up, they should be at a place that invests in tech for them to learn on that's cutting edge. They should be at a place that is trying to move the ball forward, which the best tech will help you do that. It enables it. It doesn't necessarily ensure it, right? But it certainly helps.
Yeah, I heard someone recently call it digital enablement, because they don't want to exactly ensure it. there's a lot to unpack there. I love that answer. So first I want to just summarize it. So there are three main things. There's the autonomy, investment, and more in the ramp up specifically, where companies can help keep their sales employees happy. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the fourth one was kind of that tech, which is really intertwined with each of them. I've never heard anyone talk about their office in their laptop, even though it's like obvious, but I love that comparison. I think it's super interesting that I spend time in HubSpot and Salesforce, but the fact is that people could have different experiences just on what their laptop is, right? That's in the office, home, but yeah.
Think about like going from an organization that operates in G Suite and HubSpot CRM, and then you all of a sudden now have to go to Outlook and Salesforce. It's not just like a culture shift. It's like a day-to-day, like massive change that is going to impact for a decent stretch of time, how you work. There's going to be like a technology ramp up period, just as much as there's going to be a like onboarding to get to know the company period.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting. Love that. Thanks for bringing that top of mind. Excuse me. So a question I have that popped up in my mind was, why do you think companies aren't teaching people to be better writers? I have specific questions that, yes, there's that urgency of hiring and onboarding, but could it also be that the like sales leader also doesn't know how to write the email, or that the sales leader doesn't know how to teach on how to write an email?
Yeah, I think part of it is the sales leader doesn't necessarily know the best way to teach it, because you think about when they came up, it was a volume-based business. And now everyone has the same volume knob. We can all send Gmail's 250 limit of emails per day. And so it's no longer a competitive differentiator. And so now that the thing that'll differentiate us has changed, we have to think through, what made our messaging work? I talk to sales leaders about this all the time, and they typically just kind of come back with, well, I just kind of figured it out. They didn't really like put that extra layer of thought. So one of the big things that I've been promoting this year through my newsletter, as well as just content I put out, is this idea of, take the template a step further. Think through the framework that it's built on. Take each sentence, break it down into like what it actually is trying to accomplish. Are you trying to build credibility with this sentence? What's the logical progression from each idea to each idea? use that so that you can actually understand, you know, what the building blocks of the email are. You can challenge, okay, is that actually the best arrangement of building blocks? Or is that the best building block for this email, right? Maybe you're trying to build credibility and you're like, well, yeah, maybe there's like a snippier way to say that, or maybe there's a better way to approach that. Maybe I need to just like shorten what I talk about and like what we do, because you probably do. But yeah, just thinking about it from a building blocks perspective, a lot of managers understand what they're trying to accomplish. They just haven't sat down and taken that time to build it out into the framework. And so that's a big area of my focus and my time is just being like, all right, just break it down for them. Be like, okay, here's exactly what we're trying to accomplish here. Here's why we're doing it the way we're doing it. You know, so much of onboarding skips that, like, here's why we do it this way. And so we just like tell reps, like, this is what you need to do. And it's not like, here's why. And I'd love to see you challenge it and bring something new to the table. I think it's like an underutilized aspect of onboarding is you have a fresh set of eyes on what you've been doing. And you don't ask them to come up with something new for you. Because all of those fresh perspectives, right? You're going to brainwash them into here's exactly how we do what we do. Just do it and, you know, shut up and be happy about it. And that's A, not how this generation really likes to think. But B, it's just, yeah, it removes a lot of the good ideas that are potentially sitting out there that you could be testing. And so if you break it down for them and show them every reason why you're doing what you're doing, and, you know, challenge them within their first week to be like, okay, this is a framework that this template's built on. Here's some examples of what that template looks like. Why don't you try and build a template based on your understanding of what we're trying to accomplish? You know, feel free to be creative with it. At that level of ownership and autonomy, and I saw some research, gosh, I wish I could pull exactly where it came from, but it was talking about a simple change to how you onboard a new employee. The idea was, do you introduce them to the team? So it's like, Barry, you join our team. And I say, hey, y'all, this is Barry. Barry is crushing it with this podcast. We brought him in. He's going to help us build out our, you know, brand awareness. Barry, take it from here. But, you know, here's when our marketing meetings are. Instead, I said, hey, guys. Or, you know, hey, y'all, Barry's new here. I'm going to let him just introduce himself. Giving you in that situation the autonomy to introduce yourself to the team, they actually saw like retention rates for those employees was like dramatically better. I want to say it was like 40% better. And it's just because like that first impression of like what it was like to work there, you felt like you had autonomy. You felt like you had ownership and a stake in the game. So I think about like email ramp up process. Why wouldn't you use that exact same philosophy? You know, let them take some ownership of here's why we do what we do. Come up with something new for us. We're going to test it. We're going to see if it works.
I love that. That's a great stat before. We definitely have to find that after this podcast.
Yeah, please do.
And you know, we'll try to link to it when we do. Super interesting. I love that you're bringing back the autonomy to also part of the onboarding process. excuse me.
I think part of that autonomy is the process and like the orient, like the regimentation of all this, right, has been a byproduct of us searching for efficiency. It's the whole SDR AE model. It's more efficient, right? But as technology has continued to progress, the need for that efficiency has waned. And so depending on your price point, it might be more efficient for you to actually just go full cycle. And like not enough people are actually challenging their current like go-to-market model to be like, is that the best model for us? I'm not saying the SDR model's dead, right? I'm gonna be the last person to ever say that. But I do think we need to think more about like, how we set up our sales teams, how we set up the actual experience for our customers in relation to how we set this up. Because it's like, maybe the tech stack you have in place today is good enough that you really don't need to have, you know, this segmentation of your customer experience where they introduce to, you know, they introduce to Barry and then they get introduced to Will. And then after Will sells them, they hand it off to Steve. And like, yeah, it moves on along this like, you know, pipeline. Instead, it's just they get to know Barry and Barry takes them all the way through. And yeah, that's the way it goes. It's how sales used to be. So I think another thing to realize is like this autonomy is possible now because of the advancements that we've made in technology, where you can still capture a lot of that efficiency without having to slow down and missing out on scale.
So that's interesting. Where do you think we are on that? I guess like, I think it's Gartner that puts this out like a hype cycle. I don't know if you've ever seen that with like different technologies, like they have it with drones. Where are we with sales tech on that hype cycle?
That's hard for me to say, man.
I try to ask hard questions.
I'm not quite sure. I know there's been a ton of investment and explosion of interest into the space. And, you know, there's a lot of dollars being thrown around. And you know, the question is, like, is there enough budget for those dollars? Something we think about all the time. Yeah, I'm not sure where we'd fall in like a hype cycle. So I think the obvious thought is like, yeah, if it helps you make more money, why wouldn't you continue to invest in it? But when you're looking at like the VP of sales role and like rev ops, they're trying to all just like assess all of these different things. I think at a certain point they get overwhelmed and you know, there's too much for them to evaluate. I've already started to see it with like how folks are evaluating software, where it's like, okay, let's chunk off a piece of the sales team to go test this element. And then if it works, we'll scale it out to the rest of the org. So very like experiment driven when it comes to new tech. So I've already started to see some of like the processes around how we adopt tech start to change. I don't know if that answers your question though.
The question came from the perspective that you mentioned that we're already pretty efficient in technology because of technology, the sales reps. But then obviously you're starting a sales tech kind of startup, and I'm assuming you have a lot of potential. Then we see all that influx of cash. So that's where I'm trying to find that. Where are we?
Yeah. I mean, I personally think there's plenty of room to improve. There's several inefficiencies baked into the salesperson's day, right? You look at like Dooley and Scratchpad. I'm sitting here with my Dooley hat right next to my computer, right? Those two companies, when it comes to updating a CRM, it's been like the bane of a salesperson's existence for a long stretch of time. With the advent of technologies like GPT-3, the further proliferation of like AI technology, it's just gotten easier to look at certain things that are happening within a sales rep's day to day and just make them easier, better, more efficient, but also looking at the true definition of efficiency and recognizing that effectiveness is part of it. So I still think there's plenty of opportunity there.
Yeah, cool. I love that. So I promised our listeners that we're going to talk about email tips. So let's start doing the email tips. I'm not a sales rep, so you might even have to guide me on how to ask these questions. But what are the biggest mistakes sales reps are making? And you can differentiate between AEs and SDRs if necessary, but what are the three biggest mistakes sales reps are making today when they're writing emails?
Let's start with just like the biggest misconception, because the biggest misconception that I see is this idea that a like cold email is supposed to be about you. because it's not, no one really cares. We try to be like extremely comprehensive when it comes to writing email, when in reality, that's the opposite of what we should be doing. Yeah, I always tell folks, like, there really should only be like 1-2 sentences max about you or what you do. The rest of it should be focused around them and their problems and what's going on with them. Because you think about where you're meeting them in the inbox, they're like triaging through their to-do list, right? You think about how you go through your inbox, Barry, right? You've got, you know, podcasts, you know, guests that you're trying to coordinate, internal things that you're trying to manage, vendors that you're talking to. There's a lot going on. So when you get a sales rep's email, you're trying to sort through this extra information. And so you don't really like give it the time of day. And that extra time that it takes to translate out all the things that they do back to your problems, you're not going to take the time to do it. Most people don't. And so instead, just like focusing strictly on them, their problems, and then like recognizing that you don't have that much time to get your point across. The average amount of time they're going to spend reading your email is about 11 seconds. And so with that in mind, it's like, oof, I only had 11 seconds. I got to talk about them. And so if I'm talking about them, it doesn't leave me a lot of time to talk about myself. And so like people get nervous about that, but it's actually a good thing. It's like, yes, it's a force limiting factor, and it's good, and it's for a reason. Just, you know, introduce what you do very concretely, very quickly, and then be gone. See if it's of interest, right? So that'd be like the top thing that I like to focus on. The other two things are, yeah, the idea that personalization can't scale. I see so many sales teams like fighting the data. Yeah, SalesLoft put out extensive research on the fact that personalization works. Doesn't matter where you're at within the cadence. If you personalize an email, you're going to get more positive response, 2x, right? And it's like, why wouldn't you just figure out a way to systematize that and put that into what you do? It doesn't have to be like, hey, I saw you went to like so-and-so college. Like, that's never going to be relevant. It's more about making observations about what's likely going on within their day-to-day and integrating that into outbound. So it's like, hey, saw you're hiring a bunch of SDRs. I imagine this is going on within your organization, or is this going on within your organization, right? That's personalization. It's just about showing the sales team what they should be looking for and then helping them build a process so that they can do it really quickly. And then one of my favorite points is complexity. So I sort of hit on the fact that emails are only read in about 11 seconds. That means they're basically scanning through, right? We don't read for comprehension. We read for categorization when it comes to email. And so thinking about, okay, if I'm only going to get a glimpse of their attention, I need to make this email as simple as possible so that they absorb as much of it as possible. And so that's why we actually see the best response rates come back from emails written at a fifth grade reading level. That means like stupid, simple words, you know, short, choppy sentences, really like avoiding any usage of commas whatsoever. The average email, like 70% of emails, are written at or beyond a 10th grade reading level. And like, it's an easy place where we're just like missing opportunity to optimize. Our data puts it at like, if you get it from a 10th grade down to a fifth grade, you see 31% more response. And it's just like, yeah. So those would be my top three. I would say, you know, recognizing that it's not about you, it's about them. Personalizing, and then clarity, being super simple with what you say.
Keep it simple, stupid. Always comes back to that. Do you see that marketers ever get involved with these templates, or is this a sales role?
I do see marketers get involved in building out sales sequences all the time. It's
should
not
they
my
be?
It's not my favorite thing to see. I think one of the things that marketers have to their advantage is they understand things like customer segmentation and what power that can have. You know, I came from building a customer segmentation product, right? And so you can actually feign a lot of these personalization insights by just running list segmentation, right? If I'm reaching out to a list of sales VPs that have recently gotten that VP job and were SDRs before, I can build an email that probably feels like I'm reaching out to you one-on-one. Yeah, and that's an easy list that I can build within LinkedIn Sales Navigator.
Yep.
The place where I see marketing going wrong is when they don't do that kind of segmentation, or they apply, you know, they Google what's a good cold email, and then you see these like classic errors because they haven't been in the weeds and they haven't done it, or you know, they want to be comprehensive and treat it like a landing page. And sales reps make a lot of the same mistakes. So that, like, no one party is free of, you know, blame here. But yeah, I think it's easy for us to like point at some of the more comprehensive writing and say that probably came from marketing. Yeah, I think about the classic, the subject line. So if you do a subject line that is first name, comma, some sort of whatever, right? It's a classic like marketing subject line. The recent data from SalesLoft shows that if you do that, you get 18% less response in a sales email. And it's because we got it from the marketing side of the house and we started using it. And then we thought it would work because we were looking at marketing stats to like say, like, oh, this definitely works. But like, have you ever gotten an internal email where the subject line is "Barry, increase your response rates"? No, of course not.
Maybe tonight I'll start sending that to my coworkers.
Yeah, but you know, to flip the blame on the other side, right? I see in a lot of cold emails, people say, you know, "Will, I'm Barry. I work at such and such." That introductory language is very common in cold calls. And now it's crept its way into our cold emails. And that's not necessary. You shouldn't actually do that because the end reader immediately picks up on like this, "I'm introducing myself" language. And they're like, "Oh, this is a sales rep reaching out."
Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of like, not trickery, but it's kind of like make it look like an internal email.
It's not trickery. It's not, you know, trying to pretend to be something you're not. It's recognizing the process that you're actually in, which is triage, recognizing that they're just trying to categorize and move on. And if they quickly lump you in with all the bad sales emails they've ever gotten, it's not a good place to be. You'd much rather them be thinking about problems that they're dealing with in their today, like their to-do list on their day-to-day. Keeping that as the frame of reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that makes sense.
You never really want them to feel like they figured it out. Mm-hmm. You want them to have a sense for what you do, but they have to respond to learn more.
Right, like start that conversation.
Mm-hmm. It's like, because if you're, you know, reaching out and you're telling them everything about what you do and they don't respond, what are you gonna follow up with? How are you gonna like keep emailing them, right? You basically like throwing the landing page at them and you're like, that's too much. I don't actually absorb any of that. But you're on the other side and you're like, did I say something wrong? Was it the way I messaged this? Like, this is super helpful as a tool. And it's because they didn't like actually read anything that you actually wrote. They just like saw it and they're like, oh, that's a big long sales pitch. And now for like the next 3 weeks, while you put them through some monstrosity long cadence where you reach out to them a bajillion times, every time they see your name pop up in the inbox, they've already pre-categorized you. It's all about categorization.
Yeah. I'm looking at email so differently. So thank you for that. What's one, besides for using Lavender, what's one thing that sales reps can do differently tomorrow for their emails?
Yeah, I think one thing that sales reps could do differently for their emails tomorrow is take the templates that they have and break them down into their individual parts and understand why it's actually doing what it does. Because, yeah, I view my job, right, as to teach people how to write better emails. Yes, our product makes it easier, but you can write a great email without a product. Yes, like the data's there, but you can still, people have written good emails before we existed. And so if you're actually thoughtful, if you've actually put the thought behind what you're putting out there, yeah, you're going to be in better shape than 99% of the sales reps out there.
Yeah, love that. All right, well, Will, thank you so much for joining our podcast. I learned a lot. I wasn't just saying that to be nice. I really think it's super interesting the way people think, the way people get emails, the way people are using technology today to make their processes more efficient so that they can sell more. I think all of this is very interesting, and I really appreciate your time, Will.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me on, Barry.
Yeah, of course. All right, we'll be in touch. See you.